Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for Catholic News read by Chris Mihalik. Our sources are Denver Catholic, National Catholic Register, and Catholic News Agency. No Greater Love, Kendrick Castile Memorial Unveiled in Highlands Ranch by Barbara O'Neill. On a crisp Friday morning in Highlands Ranch, a crowd of people gathered at Civic Green Park to witness the unveiling of a newly installed monument honoring Kendrick Castile. The 7-foot-tall memorial features an American flag wrapped around the column, an image of Kendrick sitting on his Jeep, a bald eagle and a cross representing Castile's faith as the foundation of his heroism. The memorial stands as a lasting tribute to the 18-year-old who died protecting his classmates during the 2019 shooting at Highlands Ranch STEM School. Unveiled on November 14th, the project was made possible through the generosity of community members who fully funded the $30,000 memorial in just a few days. But for many Catholics across Colorado, the monument marks more than just memory. It reflects a growing conviction that Castile's life, defined by his deep faith and love for his friends, bears the unmistakable marks of heroic virtue. Just months ago, the Diocese of Colorado Springs announced that it had received a petition to open Castile's cause for canonization. Now standing in the park where Castile once played as a child, the community gathered once more to pray, honor his family, and remember a young man that many regard as an incredible witness of Christ's love. For John and Maria Castile, the mourning carried a mixture of grief, pride, and gratitude. Yet when asked about what he hopes his son's example inspires in other young Catholics, John did not hesitate. "I hope that Kendrick will especially touch our young people and bring them deeper into faith and become leaders in faith," John told Denver Catholic. "I hope he inspires them to get involved in their parishes, in their community, in the archdiocese. Pray the rosary. Pray to end abortion and defend the sanctity of life. Those are the things that my wife and I hope people look to Kendrick for. I hope people ask Kendrick to pray for them." For the Castiles, the news that the Diocese of Colorado Springs has begun reviewing the petition to open their son's cause for canonization has been overwhelming in the most unexpected way. "We're elated, we're humbled. The mere words that even mention that are more important than saying we've experienced in this tragedy," John said. "We've gotten a call from the President of the United States. We've met powerful people, but to see that our Catholic brothers and sisters are considering Kendrick is unbelievable. We thank God." For the Knights of Columbus, the memorial carries a special significance. John Castile is a member of Knights of Columbus Southwest Denver Council 4844, and Kendrick planned to join the Knights after graduating high school. He was welcomed posthumously as a member of the order at the 137th Supreme Convention in 2019. Mark Salome, State Deputy of the Knights of Columbus, Colorado State Council, said the Castile family has long been woven into the fabric of the order. Salome noted that Knights from across Colorado, including Fort Collins, Castle Rock, Colorado Springs, and Burlington, drove to Friday's event to support and honored the Castile family. Their presence was a testament to the community of faith that continues to stand with his family. District Attorney George Blockler of Colorado's 23rd Judicial District also spoke at the memorial, offering a perspective shaped by his years of familiarity with the case. He began by acknowledging the complicated reality of gathering for such an occasion marked by both grief and courage. Rocker noted that Castile's instinct that day was not to run, but to act, a choice shaped by his faith, family, and moral compass. "We would be cheating Kendrick in ourselves if we did not acknowledge the role that Jesus played in his life in making that decision that day. In a split second, Kendrick lived out John 15:13. Greater love has no man than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. 6 years ago, a young man from Highlands Ranch lived those words literally. Now his community gathered to reflect on the faith that formed him and the possibility that the teenager who once prayed, served, and studied among them might one day be recognized by the church as a saint. Colorado Catholic parents and preschools ask Supreme Court for equal treatment. Catholic preschools in the Archdiocese of Denver have been seeking equal treatment for more than 2 years in the face of Colorado's exclusion of religious schools from their universal preschool program. The fight began in August 2023 when a team of lawyers from Beckett filed a lawsuit against Colorado on behalf of two of the Archdiocese Denver's Catholic preschools. After a trial in January 2024, a federal court ultimately supported the state's decision to exclude religious preschools from the program. Following this ruling, the Catholic preschools appealed to the United States Supreme Court of Appeals for the 10th District, which also sided with Colorado, allowing the state to continue excluding these Catholic preschools. Now the team at Beckett has announced that these archdiocesan Catholic preschools, together with the Archdiocese of Denver and a Colorado Catholic family, are asking the United States Supreme Court for equal treatment under the law. The press release follows. The Archdiocese of Denver, a group of Catholic preschools and a Catholic family in Colorado, asked the Supreme Court yesterday to stop the state government from excluding them from Colorado's new universal preschool program because of their faith. In St. Mary's Catholic Parish versus Roy, the United States Court of Appeals for the 10th District recently upheld the state's exclusion, punishing faith-based school and the families they serve for operating according to their religious beliefs. The court even praised Colorado's discriminatory regime as a model and an example for other states to follow. With Beckett's help, Catholic parents and preschools are asking the Supreme Court to ensure that Colorado makes good on its promise of universal preschool. Families who send their kids to Catholic preschools in the Archdiocese of Denver expect them to receive a high-quality education and to be a part of a faith-centered Catholic community. That's exactly what these preschools offer, supporting parents with the religious and educational upbringing of their children by providing excellent intellectual, moral, and spiritual formation. When Colorado launched its UPK program, offering families 15 hours of free preschools per week at the private or public schools of their choice, families sending their kids to Catholic schools across Colorado are eager to participate, but state officials imposed restrictions that excluded all faith preschools because they asked families who enroll to be supportive of their Catholic faith. Our preschools exist to help parents who want an education rooted in the Catholic faith for their children, said Scott Elmer, Chief Mission Officer for the Archdiocese of Denver. All we ask is for the ability to offer families who choose a Catholic education the same access to free preschool services that's available at thousands of other preschools across Colorado. Catholic families like plaintiffs Dan and Lisa Shelley, who want a Catholic education for their kids, are now forced to pay thousands of dollars out of pocket each year, while those attending over 2,000 other preschools, public or private, get 15 hours of preschool per week paid for by the state. The state's discriminatory rules have had their predictable effect. Since UPK began, enrollment at Catholic preschools has swiftly declined, while two Catholic preschools have shuttered their doors, including one that predominantly served low-income and minority families. The Archdiocese and its parish preschools, along with the Catholic family, have been fighting the exclusion in federal court for more than 2 years. The 10th Circuit recently sided with the state, upholding its ban on schools with faith-based admission policies, even while Colorado admits that it looks the other way when non-religious schools have admissions policies that violate state law. The 10th Circuit's ruling defies the Supreme Court's recent decisions in Carson, Espinoza, and Trinity Lutheran, which held that states cannot exclude religious schools from public benefits because of their religious exercise. Beckett is asking the court to stop Colorado's attempt to dodge this bedrock precedent and instead ensure that universal preschool in Colorado truly is universal. Colorado is picking winners and losers based on the content of their religious beliefs, said Nick Reeves, senior counsel at Beckett. That sort of religious discrimination flies in the face of our nation's traditions and decades of Supreme Court rulings. Asking the court to step in and make sure universal preschool really is universal. The court is likely to consider taking the case in early 2026. Soldier turned bishop, St. Martin of Tours, celebrated November 11th. On November 11th, the Catholic Church honors St. Martin of Tours, who left his post in the Roman army to become a soldier of Christ. Martin was born around the year 316 in modern-day Hungary. His family left that region for Italy, where his father, a military official of the Roman Empire, was transferred there. Martin's parents were pagans, but he felt an attraction to the Catholic faith, which had become legal throughout the empire in 313. He received religious instruction at age 10 and even considered becoming a hermit in the desert. Circumstances, however, forced Martin to join the Roman army at age 15, when he had not even received baptism. Martin strove to live a humble and upright life in the military, giving away much of his pay to the poor. His generosity led to a life-changing incident where he encountered a man freezing without warm clothing near a gate at the city of Amiens in Gaul. As his fellow soldiers passed by the man, Martin stopped and cut his own cloak into two halves with his sword, giving one half to the freezing beggar. That night, the unbaptized soldier saw Christ in a dream, wearing the half cloak he had given to the poor man. Jesus declared, "Martin, a catechumen, has clothed me with this garment." Martin knew that the time for him to join the church had arrived. After his baptism, he remained in the army for 2 years, but desired to give his life to God more fully than the profession he would allow. But when he finally asked for permission to leave the Roman army during an invasion by the Germans, Martin was accused of cowardice. He responded by offering to stand before the enemy forces unarmed in the name of the Lord Jesus and protected not by a helmet and a buckler, but by the sign of the cross. I would thrust myself into the thickest squadron of the enemy without fear. But this display of faith became unnecessary when the Germans sought peace instead and Martin received his discharge. After living as a Catholic for some time, Martin traveled to meet Bishop Hilary of Poitiers, a skilled theologian and later canonized saint. Martin's dedication to the faith impressed the bishop, who asked the former soldier to return to his diocese after he had undertaken a journey back to Hungary to visit his parents. While there, Martin persuaded his mother, though not his father, to join the church. In the meantime, however, Hilary had provoked the anger of the Arians, a group that denied Jesus was God. This resulted in the bishop's banishment, so Martin could not return to his diocese as intended. Instead, he spent some time living a life of severe asceticism, which almost resulted in his death. The two met up again in 360 when Hilary's banishment from Poitiers ended. After their return, Hilary granted Martin a piece of land to build what may have been the first monastery in the region of Gaul. During the resulting decade as a monk, Martin became renowned for raising two people from the dead through his prayers. This evidence of his holiness led to his appointment as the third bishop of Tours in the middle of present-day France. Martin had not wanted to become a bishop and had actually been tricked into leaving his monastery in the first place by those who wanted him to the lead of the local church. Once appointed, he continued to live as a monk, dressing plainly and owning no personal possessions. In this same spirit of cowardice, he traveled throughout his diocese, from which he is said to have driven out pagan practices. Both the church and the Roman Empire passed through a time of upheaval during Martin's tenure as bishop. Priscillianism, a heresy involving salvation through a system of secret knowledge, caused such serious problems in Spain and Gaul that civil authorities sentenced the heretics to death. But Martin, along with the Pope and St. Ambrose of Milan, opposed this death sentence for the Priscillianists. Even in old age, Martin continued to live an austere life focused on the care of souls. His disciple and biographer, St. Sulpicius Severus, noted that the bishop helped all people with their moral, intellectual, and spiritual problems. He also helped many discover their calling to the consecrated life. Martin foresaw his own death and told his disciples of it. But when his last illness came upon him during a pastoral journey, he felt uncertain about leaving his people. "Lord, if I am still necessary to thy people, I refuse no labor. Thy holy will be done," he prayed. He developed a fever but did not sleep, passing his last several nights in the presence of God in prayer. "Allow me, my brethren, to look rather toward heaven than upon the earth, that my soul may be directed to take its flight to the Lord to whom it is going," he told his followers shortly before he died in November 397. St. Martin of Tours has historically been among the most beloved saints in the history of Europe. In a 2007 Angelus address, Pope Benedict XVI expressed his hope that all Christians may be like St. Martin, generous witnesses of the gospel of love and tireless builders of jointly responsible sharing. Catholic Vote Report examines moral implications of immigration enforcement. The Catholic advocacy organization Catholic Vote has released a report examining the Trump administration's immigration enforcement efforts, concluding Christians must balance charity toward the immigrant with the common good of the receiving state. The report, titled Immigration Enforcement and the Christian Conscience, comes on the heels of the special message on immigration released by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops at its fall plenary meeting this past week. "A faithful Catholic approach to immigration begins not with politics, but with people. Compassion, hospitality, and solidarity with the poor are not optional virtues," Catholic Vote President and CEO Kelsey Reinhart said in a press release accompanying the report. "They are at the center of the gospel," she added. "Yet mercy and justice travel together. One without the other distorts both." The report by author Benjamin Mann labels the Biden administration's border policies as reckless and credits them for resulting in human trafficking, sexual exploitation of immigrants without legal status, and rampant drug cartels. The Catholics who advocate strong but humane treat immigration enforcement are sometimes accused of disobeying their bishops or the Pope, and even violating church teaching, the report states. Properly speaking, there is no such thing as an official Catholic position on the practical details of immigration policy. The report says that despite what some church leaders in America have indicated, A faithful Catholic can support strong and humane immigration law enforcement by means such as physical barriers, detention, and deportation without violating the teaching of the Church. The report asserts the Catholic teaching on immigration has been distorted by an ideological immigration lobby within the Church that has sought to present amnesty, minimal law enforcement, and more legal immigration as the only acceptable position for Catholics. This is not an act of disobedience or disrespect toward the Church hierarchy, but a legitimate difference of opinion, according to magisterial teaching, the report says. The truth is that faithful Catholics can certainly disagree with the anti-enforcement position, even if some bishops happen to share the policy preferences of these activists. Such disagreement is not a dissent from Church teaching, the document continues, citing recent popes as having said the Catholic Church has no official position on the practical details of issues like immigration policy. Rather, our faith teaches a set of broad moral principles about immigration and their application in public life as a matter of practical judgment for lay persons, the report said. The Catholic vote document further argues that it is actually immoral in the eyes of the Church for a country to accept immigrants to the detriment of its own citizens, citing paragraph 1903 of the Catechism of the Catholic Church, which states, authority is exercised legitimately only when it seeks the common good of the group concerned, and if it employs morally licit means to attain it. If rulers were to enact unjust laws or take measures contrary to the moral order, such arrangements would not be binding in conscience. In such a case, authority breaks down completely and results in shameful abuse. U.S. bishops passed directive forbidding transgender surgeries at Catholic hospitals. Catholic hospitals in the United States are explicitly forbidden from carrying out transgender-related surgeries on individuals who believe themselves to be the opposite sex, the U.S. bishop said this week. The prelates gathered at the plenary of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops in Baltimore voted on November 12th to direct hospitals to preserve the integrity of the human body when treating individuals with gender dysphoria. Such individuals often seek surgery to make their bodies conform to that of the opposite sex. But in updated guidance, the bishop said that while Catholic healthcare providers must employ all appropriate resources to mitigate the suffering of such patients, they can use only those means that respect the fundamental order of the human body. The new rules makes into explicit USSB policy what the bishops expressed in a doctrinal note in 2223 when they said Catholic providers must not take part in procedures that aim to transform the sexual characteristics of a human body into those of the opposite sex. The revised directives were hailed by the Catholic Health Association, which on November 12th statement said that the rules reaffirmed the Church's teaching on the dignity of all persons and their right to life from conception to natural death. The revisions clarify and affirm current clinical practices and are consistent with Catholic healthcare practice that does not allow for medical interventions that alter sexual characteristics absent an underlying condition, the group said. The organization said Catholic health care providers would continue to treat those who identify as transgender with dignity and respect, and that guidelines the bishops noticed that if it can be morally permissible to remove or to suppress the function of one part of the body for the sake of the body as a whole, though only in very limited circumstances, such as when the body part is diseased. In forbidding medical practices that aim to transform sexual characteristics of a human body into those of the opposite sex, the bishop cited the Vatican's 2024 document Dignitas Infinita, which in part disallows all attempts obscure reference to the ineliminable sexual difference between men and women. The USCCB's guidance comes several months after the Trump administration moved to prohibit transgender procedures performed on children in U.S. hospitals. In January, President Trump signed an executive order to prohibit hospitals that receive Medicare and Medicaid reimbursements from performing transgender operations or providing transgender drugs to anyone under the age of 19. An EWTN use analysis in 2024, meanwhile, showed that nearly 150 Catholic hospitals across the United States provided children with transgender drugs or performed gender transition surgeries on them between 2019 and 2023. Thank you for joining us for Catholic News, read by Chris Mihalik.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.